Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. Looks like we have the full cast of characters. I am Yada. We have James, Larry, and on a late arrival. Going to punish him for maybe detention. Kirk, how are you guys?
Doing good.
I was doing good, and then I didn't think Kirk was showing up, so I bit my nails off.
Uh-oh.
I'm okay now. I'm okay.
I'm
going to make it.
Kirk, you are with us?
I think Kirk dropped somehow.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I saw his number up there for a second, and then he was gone.
Let me go back to biting my nails. Okay. All right. Well, earlier today, we began the seventh Marshall Proverbs. It is a really an extension of six. Now, we covered six as we began this this series, and then we went into first Shamuel as we were considering the nature of religion, and then second Shamuel as we considered what it was that God had to say about government, and then to the 91st Psalm. So now, when we move on to the seventh Marshall or Proverb, what we're really doing is this is a continuation of six. And the thrust of six was, I really hate Paul. I really despise Christianity. And the best thing that you can do is to denounce political affiliations, religious affiliations, and immerse yourself in my Torah. That's a decent summary of Proverbs 6, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would.
Sounds about right to me.
Well, what we're going to find in Proverbs 7, it will also use the whore as a metaphor for Satan's influence in religion. And it is going to be in opposition to the same individual, Pauline Christianity. The only difference is this time is going to refer to him both by his chosen name and by his given name. So this is very explicit. And it is going to move to a section where it talks about how religion is the antithesis of what Yahweh is offering and how the whore of religion stalks her prey.
Do you mind, Yada, before we start? I had to.
Sure.
I booted a woman out of UT this week because, and I just want to explain why. Because apparently she's a listener and she'd been a member a year. She just doesn't participate at all, other than to complain, apparently. And the reason I did it, some clown who was involved in Christianity had sent me this rather lengthy message about how we should pray for Fred Snell, that he's losing his grip on the New Testament. And I basically sent him over about five messages, and then he wanted to debate the fact, and I just said to him, everybody plug your ears who have never graduated second grade. I said, fuck off. And I posted
Uh-oh.
That. Oh, yeah, okay. And this was offensive to a woman who uses Yahweh as in a U, so she takes the light out of his name. I told her I thought that was offensive. And she said, we are to just dust our feet off. And you know, to me, I'm going to tell you, I think telling somebody to fuck off is pretty much dusting your feet off, taking the dust off your feet. And there was just nothing else to tell the guy. I mean, I'm on my way, you're blocked, and that's what I think of you, nothing. Not to mention the fact the guy had called me brother. And I don't accept that coming out of religious initiates. No, I'm not your brother. I'm not your friend. And I'd like to know, and she wanted to know, if does Craig know what's going on in here? Here's the thing. somebody wants to wring their hands, but they don't even want to look at what's going on. Now, and I'd like to know, is there anywhere that you know of, anywhere in the Torah, where Yahweh says, please be gentle and kind and baby those who are in total opposition to me? Because I can't find it.
Here's the reality of all that. Well, I have chosen not to use the F-bomb. And
okay.
I did for a lot of reasons. One is I used to use it a lot when I was in business. And it
I'm still in business, so you have to.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and it it was concerning to my wife because I would bring it home and I would occasionally use it around home, and I just stopped. And you know, when I did the radio shows, it's illegal. So so you can't do it on the radio. No, this is the blog and Blog Talk Radio, so it is. There's no penalty point in using the term. There is, there would have been in Shattering Myths. Can't use it. I choose not to use it for another reason, and that is that I must have received 10,000 letters from Muslims after writing Prophet of Doom, and most of them did not have a vocabulary that went beyond four-letter words. And after a while, you just say, you know, have you got nothing else to say? You know, didn't you learn how to communicate? And so I chose not to use it. Now, going to the just knock the dust off your feet. We began this review in Proverbs where Yahweh said specifically that I want you to go boldly in front of those that you have formed an alliance with and renounce it and hold them accountable. Tell them why you did so. And throughout the first two chapters of Yahshayah, which is where I'm focused now, I'm about three chapters ahead of where we are in this program. Yahweh is using very harsh language to describe religious and political individuals. You know, when he says, listen, a cow knows who made it, and an ass knows its Lord, and yet you're clueless. You know, that is not exactly, well, let's let bygones be bygones, no big deal, I'm not going to hold a beef, we just disagree, and that's okay, I'm just going to walk away. That's not what Yahweh does.
Nope.
As a matter of fact, in the section that I'm on right now, this is coterminous with his return. And Yahweh says, you know, I'm coming back with some unresolved issues that I'm going to resolve. And I put up with religious and political people for a very long time, and I'm not going to do it anymore. It's over. I'm adverse to them. I'm first going to eliminate them from the earth, and then I'm going to diminish them. And, I mean, he is really angry. You can tell by the words that are chosen and the tone that's there. And he's specifically angry at those who are full of themselves. You know, somebody says, well, let's go debate the New Testament. No, we're not going to go do that. And so if you want to follow Yahweh's example, his example is to reject these people and to do so bluntly and boldly, and he doesn't do so using polite terms. Now, the other thing I would like to share is, as I was going through this, one of the lines that I wrote is, you know, so much for political correctness, so much for multiculturalism. God's not into it. You know, and I said, you know, when you find there's a place where God says, I am going to annihilate my enemies. And you say, all right, well, that is in conflict with what is ascribed to Yahusha and the Christian New Testament, where he says, judge not lest you be judged, and love your enemies as yourself. And here's Yahweh saying, I despise my enemies. I think they're an abomination, and I'm going to destroy them.
Yeah, maybe that's one of the reasons that Yahweh told us not to read Christian material and don't consume the wild boar, their preaching or their teaching. And last I knew, wild boars didn't preach or teach anything. I mean, I've never seen their writings or anything. So I can only assume he's talking about Christian New Testaments, which is basically where this woman was coming from. You know, I'm so tired of the Yahusha thing. Yahusha is a diminished part of Yahweh. There is no part of him that disagrees with the Torah. You know?
No.
And loving the enemies of the Torah is not part of the deal. It just isn't.
Right. So, so are there some conflicts between the Christian New Testament and the Torah prophets themselves? Well, half of the Torah prophets themselves is nothing but a conflict. I mean, every one of Paul's 13 letters plus Hebrews plus 80% of Acts is in direct conflict with the Torah prophets themselves. But then you realize there are three eyewitness accounts, and the problem with the eyewitness accounts is that they were written in Hebrew, but they have been translated into Greek by people who were not eyewitnesses, and then they have been retained extraordinarily poorly by people who had a religious agenda, and so there are more changes to the text than there are words in the text. So my view is that the only thing that you can rely on in the Christian New Testament is the words of Yahusha when he is citing something that's either already in the Torah prophets and Psalms, so he's quoting the Torah prophets or Psalms, or he is affirming something that is in the Torah prophets and Psalms, then I think you can trust it. Apart from that, if there's a conflict between the Torah, prophets, and Psalms and something in the Christian New Testament, I don't lose sleep over it. I just say, there's no conflict.
Like the bedtime story where he said, "He who is without sin cast the first stone," that they threw into their writings.
And that one, of course, is in one of the eyewitness accounts. That is the account of Ya'ukanan. And yet, that entire story, probably the most famous story in the entire account, with the adulterous woman and him drawing in the dirt and say, you know, the accusers have all gone away, so I don't judge you either. And I'm sorry, but in this regard, it we know for a fact it did not exist.
Maybe I can unblock this guy. Maybe I can unblock this guy and get him to pray for you, too. You know, I don't sit around and pray that with some delusional religious initiate, and never going to, by the way. I don't care who they are. I don't care if it's my own mother. You understand? I don't care.
Right.
I'm going to stand up to them. I'm going to tell them I have no respect for them. And, if anything, I'm just going to say, I wish you dead. That's it. End of story. I'm not going to be nice to them. They've destroyed the world. And by the way, whether you use the F-bomb or don't, let me tell you, Larry Hendricks saying the F-bomb to you will be nothing in comparison to this tribulation period coming up where you maybe should have listened to Yahweh after he shared four notes that were full of Yahweh's words to you. And if you've decided that being kind is better than being honest, well, you know, I've got no use for you either.
But I'm going to leave it at that. The whole thing about, shake the dust from your shoes, look at that in context. Don't let it get you down when people reject you, is what he was saying. But it was in the context of going out to people's homes and trying to teach them. And so when you go into someone's home and they reject you and they call you names and they kick you out, don't let it get you down. Knock the dust from your feet and move on. You know, if I'm at someone's house and I'm trying to teach them and they have no interest and they want to just, throw me out the house, I'm going to walk away, and I'm not going to sit there. But not when someone comes into your house. And
there
that's a whole different story. Someone comes into your house and starts trying to, spread lies. It doesn't say shake the dust off your feet then.
Right. And that, by the way,
that's putting it in context,
isn't
it?
That's brilliant. And that was my issue with every radio show I did and every email that I wrote, is that if I was out soliciting somebody and they did not like what I had to say, that's just fine. I'll walk away. But if they come into, my email, my home, the shows that I was doing, and they want to promote religious lies, I'm going to be intolerant.
Exactly. I'm not going to let that get spread around my house.
Yeah. So,
I just wanted to bring that up just as a matter of, you know, it's not me being hateful. It's not me being anything. It's just, you know, it is what it is. If you want to maintain I can tell you the last thing we are an unpopular truth is a church group, okay? And if you want to maintain churchianity and holding hands and kumbaya and we love you and all that, don't go to unpopular truth because we don't love people in opposition to Yahweh. Matter of fact, we don't even like them. So,
right.
You know, it's just Yahweh that hates you them. Don't walk in there if you want to spread the love.
Right.
You know?
He hates them.
Yeah, I just want to get that out there because I just don't want anybody to think I'm hiding or ducking or doing things behind, you know, Yada's back that he wouldn't approve of. You know, you might not like the F-bomb, but the rest of it was straightforward. And I told her, basically, what's upsetting to me is when somebody takes the you, uses a you and takes the light out of Yahweh's name, and she called it being vile. Let me tell you. I don't believe that anybody could graduate from the second grade in the United States without hearing the F word today. They certainly couldn't when I was growing up. I learned it in first grade. You know, I don't think you could watch a movie outside one of these phony, bony Disney things without hearing it. I don't think you could do practically anything in this world without hearing it. So if vile is the word for somebody using the word F, what is it when you take the light out of Yahweh's name? Or what is it when you call Yahusha Yahshua?
I don't look at language as being vile, as the curse words, damn and shit and those kinds. I really don't. I don't look at them as being vile.
Vile is a whole nother issue.
What I look at as vile is those who are promoting religion and militarism. And somebody wants to sing God Bless America at a baseball game, I think that's vile. If somebody wants to pledge allegiance to the flag, I find that vile. If somebody wants to sing Onward Christian Soldiers, I want to puke. There's lots of things that I find vile. Language is not one of them. The as I say, I would recommend not using the F-bomb because of the fact that it has a tendency to diminish the individual's credibility that is using it. It can the person who is receiving it will now discard the message based upon the person who wielded it. When the Muslims, by the tens of thousands who would write me and describe what they thought was my mother's sexual behavior and mine, their language was so crude that it was obvious that they had no ability to communicate intelligently. So, I would just mock them.
That'd be one thing if that's all I ever did. You know, I write pretty extensively, okay? I just don't have... by the way, I have a tendency not to trust people that are on their pins and needles of total, you know, politeness and things like that. That begins to irk me, okay? I used a word that's pretty common. In fact, it's extremely common, and it's not the extent of my vocabulary, but not by a bite.
People who are offended by words like that tend to be more on the religious side, and most anything you say is going to fall on deaf ears for them anyway.
Well, everything I just described was religious.
Right.
Loving them, being polite on the way out the door.
Shaking
the dust off your feet.
Yahweh's way. It wasn't Yahusha's way. Yahusha, if you want to read angry, read Matanyah 23. Read what Yahusha had to say to the religious and political economic establishment in Jerusalem. He calls them every derogatory name under the book. And those who were foolish. In fact, in this proverb, we're going to have Yahweh say, you know, the people I saw that were into religion were foolish. They were stupid. That's what he's going to say.
That's
so,
not very polite.
You know, I will constantly say that to be religious, you have to be ignorant and irrational. Now, people look at ignorant and irrational as pejorative terms, and I look at them as very technical terms, that it's impossible to be religious and not also be ignorant and irrational. So to a lot of people, that's way too harsh. But, you know, I look at the example of Yahweh. He's harsh. Now, you know, I also think if you look at Dod, who is the person Yahweh loved the most, you know, you talk about dropping an F-bomb. I mean, this was a guy that must have F-bombed everything that walked. I mean, if it had a skirt, he was chasing it. So
literally, yeah.
Well, literally, I mean, literally.
I've been reading
a lot about Dod because of the fact that I've been trying to understand everything that I can about Zion, and I've come to some interesting conclusions about Zion as a result. But one of the things that just screams out with Dod is that he has some real issues with his libido. And Yahweh only once took him to task for it. And that's when, you know, he got his general killed so that he could take his wife. And, you know, that was really the only time that Yahweh took him to task for it. It's, there's other times Yahweh's angry at Dod, but, you know, he'll say, listen, I'm going to forgive you, and, you know, everything will be fine with us, but you really ought not have done this, and I'm disappointed. In fact, we'll get into one of these days a whole discussion where Yahweh says, okay, based upon what you've done, because I asked you to be a shepherd for Israel to take care of my flock, and you had, which means that you're supposed to lead them to water, which means that you're supposed to protect them, and you have been counting them so to determine how many of them there are to protect you, and you just sent a whole bevy of them into Bethlehem, where the Philistines were, to grab you a cup of water, and then you spilled it on the ground. So, you know, we've got some issues here, and I'm going to give you three options as to how you want to deal with it. And Dod picked poorly.
Now let's get 70,000 people killed. Exactly.
Yeah, he had 70,000 people killed, as opposed to himself just... Yeah.
I know. So, and when I hear somebody get so trite as to say, you know, your language or something, first of all, my language isn't vile. I've heard people speak in a vile fashion, and vile's a whole other issue.
I think Jesus Christ is vile. I think the sign I saw today as I was driving home from the nursery, Christ died for your sins. I think that's vile.
I think it is vile.
I've been looking at maps of Jerusalem. The Dome of the Rock and Aska Mosque and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Vile.
Vile.
It's repulsive. That's vile.
Yeah, the ones that are going to get blown apart upon the arrival, yeah.
Yeah,
I read that.
Bernie Sanders taking some time off of his campaign to go to the Vatican to meet with the most vile individual on the planet today. You know, the Pope, so they can get the two communists can, you know, bless one another. I think that's vile.
These are vile actions, and they're going to get billions of people killed. But I will tell you one thing: me telling somebody to F off won't. And maybe it'll make them think. I don't know. I really doubt it.
I think
it.
When Ted Cruz decided to show to print a picture that Donald Trump's wife was a model for GQ, and Cruz decided to take that picture and he said, "Does this look like someone you would want to be the first lady? And if not, vote for Ted Cruz for president."
Well, I went and looked at the picture. If I have to have a first lady, I'm not into having a first lady or a king or anything else, but if I have to have one, she'll do. I'm
she'll
telling
do.
You. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I looked at it and I did the same thing because I wanted to see what the ad said because Ted Cruz denied that he had anything to do with it. Of course, it was his campaign that did it, and you just look at it and say, but using that picture that way, I think that's repulsive.
I'll bet your Ted's concubines don't look too bad either. I'm just going to guess that, but I haven't seen them. I understand there's at least five of them. So
there's five of them.
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Anyway, so I just had to I wanted to air that because I didn't want
anybody
picking up.
I would like to end it
hiding.
By, if I could, Larry, by saying sure. Just some summation things. One is that I have nothing to do with your Facebook site. So does Craig know? Don't know. Don't care. I happen to like your Facebook site because there are many people who come to know Yanoa because of what you have done at Unpopular Truth. So I'm not neutral because I've seen scores of people come to know Yanoa because of what you have done. So I'm not the least bit neutral. And we take the exact same approach to Yanoa. Yanoa is blunt. He's bold. He's in your face. He is not all lovey-dovey. He hates. And doesn't fight fire with fire. He fights fire with his words. And you do the same thing. So we are wholly in sync in that regard. Personally, I don't use the F-bomb in my writing and my personal language because what I have to say is so harsh, so unpopular, to use your term, that I'm already irritating people beyond what they have ever been irritated before just by telling them that, like, for example, that sign, there is no Christ. That's the name of a Greek god. There is no Jesus. That's also the name of a 20th or a 19th century Greek god. And God can't die. What you're writing is ridiculous. The sign you have is ridiculous. You just say that to people, it already sets them their little heads spinning on it on their necks. So, I think that just after a while, the better part of valor is once you've invested the time in trying to correct somebody, and if they're not accepting that correction, which would be 100% of religious people, then I just block them and say, I've got nothing more to say to you. There's nothing I can say that's going to make any difference. Nothing God's going to say. Go away. And sometimes just tell them to go away. My experience is every time I've done that, they go, they have conniption fits. My son, literally and continually observe my words, my answers and my promises. This is from a mirror. As we know, there are three Hebrew words for words. The most common is dabar, which just means my words, my statements. There's imrah, which means my words and my promise. And then there's emir, which is my words, my answers, and my promises, brings all three together. And this is important that it has really all three of those because we're going to be talking about Zion later. And with Zion, there are three very specific signposts on Moriah that are all Zion. So it's words, answers, and promises, especially my instructions and conditions for participating in the covenant relationship, my mitzvah, electing to continually store them within you as a treasure. This is Yahweh's approach. He says, he's going to go so far as to say here that if you observe his testimony, you're going to live forever. And we talked about that on the show this afternoon, and that surprises most people that could be the case. I mean, how do you go from simply observing to living forever? And the answer is that if you take the time to closely examine and carefully consider who Yahweh is and what he's offering, 100% of those who invest the time with an open mind, who are rational, they're going to accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, the best deal in the universe. So God goes on to say, and you shall genuinely and continuously live by closely examining and carefully considering my directions and conditions of the binding covenant agreement, and with my Torah teaching in accord with the center and focus of your eye. The mitzvah are presented in only one place. You'll only find the terms and conditions and the benefits of the covenant in one place. That's in the Torah. And he is re-emphasizing here that to observe is to closely examine, because while the King James says, my teaching is the apple of your eye, well, it's my Torah, T-W-R-H, my Torah, in accord with the center and focus of your eye, the pupil of your eye. There is no mention of fruit here. So if you're focused directly on the words of the Torah, God's answers, his promises, his testimony in his Torah, specifically the terms and conditions of the covenant, you're going to live forever. And that isn't even the good part. You know, eternal life isn't necessarily good. The good part is being part of the covenant family. So this starts off with, that's the positive. And, you know, Larry, and everything that I've ever heard you do, and I think in this particular case, this was the same thing. You always start with, here's what God has to say. Here's who he is. This is what he's offering. This is what who God is. This is what he has to say. This is what he's offering. This is the benefit of participating. So he starts there, but he spends equal amount of time condemning that which deceives people, that takes them away from what he's offering. All right, then we move to the third verse. It's, choose to fasten them onto your fingers and of your own volition engrave them on the tablets of your heart. Fingers and heart. Fasten and engrave. So, Larry, why do you think that's the approach that he wants us to take?
Fasten and engrave?
Why fasten to your fingers? Yeah, fasten to your fingers. Is he actually asking you to
embrace
to
it?
Take,
hold on to
some of those statements and wrap them around your fingers?
No, he's asking us to embrace it.
Yeah, the hand in Hebrew is the is symbolic of what we do, our power, our actions. So if the Torah is fastened to our fingers, it's going to guide our actions. That's why it's there. All right, the heart. JB, you were the one who did the most diligent study on the heart. Why does he ask us of our own volition to engrave them on the tablets of our heart? You know, it's pretty hard to take your heart out and say, I think I'm going to write this on it.
I'm going to take these
tablets. What are you talking about there?
Your innermost being, the core of you, make it a part of your life.
Yep, but also the heart and the time that this was written was the seat of judgments. It's the place where you process information and made wise, moral, rational decisions.
Study this, learn it, know it inside and out. Make
you know,
part of
there's a place in the Torah where it says, put them on the back of your hand, put the Torah on the back of your hand, you know, put it on your forehead, so between your eyes, so it should help frame your perspective, because if you have the proper perspective, everything makes sense. Back of your hand against like the fingers here, so it guides what you do in your life. And there's a bunch of religious types that just take that out of context, and they actually have a little box that goes on the back of the hand. They wrap it every day. They put it in the back of their hand, and they put their little love box on their forehead between their eyes. Why don't you think they take their heart out and write on it? I mean, should we give God some credit for communicating in symbolic language?
I can't remember who it was, but they put it real well. You know, God gave man common sense. Isn't it appropriate to assume he has it?
Yes. Yeah. God's not telling you to chisel this onto your heart. That's not a good idea. He's telling you where to, you know, one of the things that you can't go wrong, and Larry, this goes right back to what you did earlier today. You can't go wrong if you follow Yahweh's example. So if Yahweh hates, if Yahweh thinks that things are abominations, if God's really in the face of his adversaries, there's nothing wrong with us doing it. When Yahweh returns, the first thing he's going to do is what with his Torah? Where is he going to write it?
On a heart.
All right. So
he's
going to
make
it
an intricate part of our inner self. Yeah, I mean,
right.
Period.
Since he wrote that 2,600 years ago, that he was going to do that in our future, we can actually follow his example, even though he hasn't done it yet. So he's just telling us, yeah, I'm going to do it for you, but between now and then, why don't you follow my example?
Yeah, if somebody came up and tried to fool you, Yada, you know, with some religious deception of some kind, it'd be pretty tough, wouldn't it? You might say, you know, I don't know that particular. Yeah, you might say, I don't know that particular Torah address. You want to show it to me, but it doesn't sound like it falls in line with the rest of the Torah. It's like, I don't know all the Torah. I don't have to know all the Torah, by the way. And I don't. And I don't claim to. And I'm certainly, like you, don't claim to know everything in the Torah. Although you know more than I do. You know more than probably the rest of us out here. But I will tell you this. I know enough to know when somebody's blowing smoke up my ass. I can tell you that.
Yeah,
and
that's exactly it.
That's when I'm
wrong. Understand it. Nobody's going to fool you. And they're not going to fool you because your perspective, the place where you're going to make the connection, you say, all right, is that consistent with Yahweh as he presents himself in the Torah? Is it consistent with the path home that Yahweh has provided in his Torah? Is it consistent with the Torah being liberating, the Torah being the means to our vindication? Is it consistent with Yahweh being unchanging and dependable? And if it isn't, then if they're saying that what they're quoting is in the Torah, or in the prophets, or in the Psalms, then the task at hand is to go into the totality of what's being said there and look with significant diligence at the entire context, the words that are actually used, and to see if, in fact, it is as they say. And, I mean, I've probably done this now 500 times. And every time I've done it, I've seen that what is actually being said in context is consistent with Yahweh and his Torah and fits right in. So that is the answer. Then this says, elect to say to wisdom, you are my sister and my wise friend whom I know, I acknowledge and recognize. You choose to call upon, or you should choose to call upon and summon understanding. Wisdom is the application of understanding. You know, there's knowing, there's being ignorant and not knowing anything. Then there's knowing, which is better than being ignorant. And then there's understanding. The application of understanding is wisdom. And so God said, if you observe my Torah, the result is going to be that wisdom becomes your sister, you know, part of your family, and it's your friend. Wisdom becomes understanding. Wisdom becomes your friend, something you know, you acknowledge, you recognize, that you should choose to call upon for understanding. So that is the reason that those of us who have taken the time to value the Torah have grown to the point where we understand, and once you understand, there is nobody that's a threat. Nobody is a concern. There's nothing anybody can do or say that's going to have any effect. It's just so comforting to be in that position.
I agree. I mean, it's nice. It's like I said before, and I brought this up last week. There's a weight taken off your shoulders when you understand there's really nothing for you to do. When you or I or anyone out here in the chat room or anybody that's listening, when we're out sharing Yahweh's truths with somebody, we're doing all we can do.
That's right.
I mean, beyond that, nobody's asking me to nail myself to a upright pole. You know, there's a group of religious idiots down in Mexico. Every Easter, they get a bunch of their young men to come out and show their Christian faith by being nailed overnight to a cross. Can you believe that?
Amazing.
This is why Yahweh says why in your right mind do you do that? I don't know. I'm speechless. I mean, Yahweh
stupid does.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. As if being nailed to the to a cross is going to endear you to God.
Yeah.
Boy, that was really fun. I had a great time. I would recommend it.
What a party that was.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't. You know, wow. Forget about my invitation to party with me at Passover and unyeasted bread and firstborn children and the empowerment of the promise of seven. Let's not do any of those. Let's instead all get together and we'll nail ourselves to crosses.
When I saw that, and I saw these idiots walking out to do it, I was like, where do they get these people?
Yeah, right.
You know, wow.
So here it is. By being observant, you will be protected from the illegitimate, estranged, unauthorized, sickening, and repugnant woman, away from the whore, seductive words, and deceitful promises. Every time that Yahweh uses the term whore, he never once is talking about sex, ever.
No, he's not.
That is not his concern.
That is not his concern.
Right.
He really has very little. Listen, if Dode is his favorite person, and Dode has some real issues with sex, I don't know if you would call it what you would call a concubine, the difference between a concubine and a prostitute. But, I mean, Dode had him in
how
space.
Much you pay?
Yeah, I guess. We have one, you have to pay for everything, their entire upkeep. You had to go pay somebody because they're a slave, essentially. You buy them as a slave, and you keep them. I mean, it doesn't sound like a good idea to me. Anyway, that was Dode's thing. And so when God is talking about the whore here, he ain't talking about sex. And the reason that it's whore, feminine, and not some gigolo, is because everything, and this is something Kirk brought up today in observations, is that everything that God holds dear, that is important for us, how we are engaged in a relationship with him, is feminine. Torah, feminine. Covenant, feminine. His home, feminine. Even his name, ending in ah, is feminine. Everything's feminine. Mitzvah, feminine. And so the rival to what God is offering in terms of the nurturing and the support of his set-apart spirit and his Torah and his covenant, all of which are feminine, the challenger to that, the other woman, is the whore. And so since the covenant is a marriage vow, the other woman is the whore. And she is here, Satan and religion are being presented as a whore because they are faking a relationship. They're faking love. They're faking everything that is part of a marriage. It's all fake. And they're enriched for doing so. So, in this case, God is saying, now, is there such a thing as a legitimate, authorized, healthy, and with the opposite of repugnant, but wholesome whore?
Not lately, pal.
Help me.
they got entire groups of them sitting in churches every Sunday. I can promise
okay.
you that.
So since whores don't come that way, God is not talking about an actual prostitute. And by the way, the problem with a prostitute isn't their seductive words or deceitful promise. You know, if you're going to engage in a prostitute, you're going to engage a prostitute. You know, I've got my issues, but that has never been one of them. I am just not going to do it with a prostitute. Never been appealing to me. But
yeah.
I can surmise from those, you know, you see presentations of prostitution on all kinds of television and movies and that sort of thing. So I'm not unfamiliar with the profession. And I can assure you that 99.999% of prostitution is not a product of a deceitful promise by the prostitute. You know, the prostitute is solicited on a very real arrangement. I will pay you for sex. There is no deceitful promise here. I mean, she's not saying, oh, but, you know, I'm really going to fall in love with you. She's not saying that. This is not a prostitute in the sense of a sexual act. This is religion.
It's clear. That's what he calls when people are, you know, engaging with the whore. They're taking part in the idea of attaching religious notions to the creator of the universe, which is just asinine when it gets right down to it.
By being observant, laughable. You'll be protected from the illegitimate, estranged, unauthorized, sickening, and repugnant. This is czar. Wrongful and foreign, illicit and alien, strange and lowly, overly ornamental, and excessively binding, therefore religious, from Zera, nauseating and sickening, repulsive and loathsome, despicable. So those are some fairly negative terms. Would you say calling a woman nauseating, calling a woman repulsive, calling a woman loathsome and despicable, even diseased, would you say that's probably
unflattering?
That's unflattering. Oh, there's the Kirkster. Yeah, that's unflattering.
So, like that line at a bar or something wouldn't work.
No, you wouldn't.
Go
say,
try it,
hey, woman.
You, know
you are really loathsome and despicable and disgusting, and I think you're diseased.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't work out now that I think about it. I hadn't really thought about it until now, but okay. Yeah.
But according to Yahweh, the whore of religion is all of those things.
And he also says that, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Kirk.
No, I was just going
to
say, also,
I saw your name appear there. We tried to get you.
Yeah, we had electrical, the electricity. About 5,000 homes went out, so he just came back on. So, but
oh,
he also I made a note that he was talking also about a foreigner, so he's identifying even further. It's not something going on in Israel. I mean, it may go on in Israel, but it didn't come from Israel. So he's obviously pointing again to Babylon. So this is pretty clear on what he's talking about. So Yahweh's talking about.
Correct. As a matter of fact, one of the things that is important to recognize here, and we talked about this before, there are those who will say that God is railing against Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not.
Didn't exist then.
There was
it didn't exist. Yeah. Judaism as a religion didn't really exist until right around the first century BCE. And so Yahweh has nothing to say about Judaism, ever. Nothing.
Well, he cuts the rabbinic clerics off in Malachi. When he says, you know, from now on, I'm not even, you guys just look like somebody that's got animal refuse smeared all over your faces.
In one of the places, he talks about long rabbinic prayers and how disgusting they are, and he's not going to listen to them. You know, so he uses language that certainly indicates that he's disgusted by every religion and that religion. But the religion that was being practiced in Israel was the Babylonian religion. It's Christianity.
Sure.
And it bears every resemblance to Christianity you know, it had a dying and resurrected God. It had an Easter and Christmas celebration. It had a Trinity. It had endless prayers. It had all sorts of religious imagery. It had bowing down. It had all of that kind of stuff that is associated today with Christianity. That's the religion that he is condemning here. Now, another affirmation of that is when Yahweh returns, he reconciles his relationship with Yisrael and with Yehudah, which means that the problems that associate with the whore still exist, but not with them. And so when he's talking about the mother of harlots in Revelation, you know, the mother of harlots, and then he says, you know, Babylon, finally, you know, he says, come out of her, my people, and finally at the end, Babylon has fallen. And so that the mother of harlots, the whore of whores, and Babylon are one and the same, and it exists to the last day, he's talking about Christianity. So the mother of harlots is Christianity.
Yeah, it exists right up to the... Sure.
Yeah,
it's right there. Yep.
None of the Bible scholars figured that out. Why do you suppose?
It's so obvious. I mean, it's so obvious in...
it is obvious.
In Daniel.
You want me to take a stab at it there, Kirk?
When Gideon is going through the world history from the present day in Babylon through the destruction of Babylon at the hands of the Persians, and then the Persians defeat by the Greeks, and then the Greeks defeat by the Romans, and then the ultimate demise of Imperial Rome, but then out of Imperial Rome grows, out of a lowly and little horn, grows Roman Catholicism. And it is so obvious that the only thing that grew out of Rome is Roman Catholicism, particularly when you do the history, and you particularly at that period of time between Constantine and Theodosius. Imperial Rome became the Roman Catholic Church. And it's the only beast that has tread upon the whole world, and it's a beast that is still active, devouring people, right up to the day that Yahweh returns. And there is no other viable candidate in the world.
That's well put. And the answer to Kirk was, you know, pay me. That's why none of them have figured it out, because if they sat down and they presented the truth.
Right.
I think you tried that in Falwell's University, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Right? How did that work out?
Yeah, you said everything you're saying is true. Yeah, everything you said is true. That's, there is no Jesus Christ, it is Yahweh. The Torah still stands. There is no Trinity. Christmas and Easter are Babylonian holidays. Yeah, we know all of that. That's all true. But if we were to say that, no one would sit in the pews of our church. And if we were to say that, the letters that arrive in the mail to support our university would no longer come. And if you say that, you'll be labeled a kook.
Think how much Yahweh would like you.
Yeah.
I'd say it's
getting right off.
Yeah. I mean, if
that's how it worked out, huh?
Being enriched by Yahweh or making a few shekels by promoting a lie that's going to cost my the incarceration of my soul for all eternity, boy, I'm going to have to think long and hard about which one of those I'm going to go with.
Kirk, there's your answer, pal.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. For in and by the window of my house, through my lattice denoting the proper timing of things, from a higher elevation I looked down, and I saw with her were the simple-minded and the naive, the easily deceived, the malleable, the readily persuaded, the ignorant and the irrational, with deficient judgments, the foolish, from Patath, the airheads who are gullible, simply enticed, and readily misled and betrayed. And I made the connection, understanding and recognizing among the children a young man of deficient character, lacking judgment.
Wow.
A cashier without the ability to process information and good judgment, bereaved of his ability to reason, senseless. Now, there are three things here. And I think all three are profound. The single most profound thing here is the nature of religion. The whore doesn't have her own home. The whore doesn't have her own plan. The whore isn't over there at some other place trying to lure people away from Yahweh. Where is the whore?
On the corner.
Right outside the window of Yahweh's home. The whore is trying to, you know, it's like the whore walked into the Garden of Eden. The whore isn't trying to create a retort to Yahweh. The whore isn't trying to create a new plan that is different than Yahweh. The whore isn't trying to say, you know, Yahweh's not a very good God, so maybe you ought to consider me. The whore is lurking right outside of Yahweh's home. That's why Christianity lugs around the Old Testament. They know there's a connection there. You know, that's why Easter falls right on top of Passover. That's why Christmas replaces Sukkah. That's why Sunday replaces the Shabbat. It's all right there close. And so that, if you're looking for Satan, if you're looking for the whore, you need to look at a place that's very close to Yahweh's home. You know, as an artist, Kirk, if you decided that you wanted to use your skill rather than drawing platypuses to draw $100 bills, you're going to make your counterfeit as close to the real McCoy as you possibly could. And yet, rather than an asset, it's a liability. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of religion. The Quran garners 100% of its credibility, not that it has any, but what little it has, it garners 100% of it from bastardizing and twisting the Talmud, which bastardizes and twisted the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. That is Satan's only approach. So the first thing that's important is Yahweh saw the whore lurking outside of the window of his home. Just at a lower dimension. All right, so the whore is lurking, is working in a lower dimension than Yahweh's home and right outside the home. The second here is that those people who are seduced by the whore are just not thinking. I mean, it is so obvious that Christianity is wrong. God can't die.
Yeah.
There was nobody named Jesus Christ. The Trinity is Babylonian. Easter is Babylonian. Christmas is Babylonian. Sunday worship is Babylonian. Kneeling down in prayer is despicable. It makes God look like he's an idiot.
They don't know his name.
You know, for Paul to be speaking the truth, you have to believe that God said, you know, I just give up. Everything that I did and said, you can just toss away. I was clearly wrong. I'm incompetent. I'm impotent. I can't save anybody. I'm mean. I just blew it. So what I want to do is I want to pick the most despicable man I can find, and I want that despicable moron to contradict everything that I have ever said and forget the fact that I'm the creator of the universe and the author of life. He's going to contradict everything I said, and he's going to come up with his own plan and have absolutely no credibility associated with it, not a single prophecy to prove it, but you ought to believe him. I mean, you have to be an absolute nincompoop to be a Christian.
Well, that's one of the reasons Yahweh doesn't want to spend eternity with these people. They've questioned nothing.
Correct. Correct. They may have a brain, but they're not using it. So God is saying that the people that hang with the whore, the people who go to church, they're airheads. They're easily deceived. They're malleable. They're simple-minded. They're naive. It's their own damn fault. We're unwilling to think. And you don't have to spend a lot of time to figure out that the Christian New Testament is full of it. Now, the third thing here is the one that we all latch onto because we already know all of that. He's saying that there's among the naive and the whore lurking outside of Yahweh's home in a lower dimension. There was a young man. And this young man had a deficient character. He lacked judgment. Gee, who do you think that is?
Give me one
guess. Working with the whore.
Why? I know who it is.
Yeah. Yeah, by the way, the name, Yahweh names this individual at the end of this proverb.
It's not that we can figure it out. Anybody could figure this out.
Correct.
If, I mean, anybody could figure this out. This is just too obvious.
Yeah.
Unless you just
now,
don't want to.
You
don't want
to spend the whole thing. Yeah. Is there a young man that's lurking with the whore and outside of Yahweh's home and any place else that you could look? You know, was Muhammad lurking outside of Yahweh's home when he created the Quran? Was he out there in Mecca and Medina?
No, nobody's there.
Yeah, Maimonides, when he created his 13 codicils of Judaism.
I think it was in Egypt.
Yeah, it was Spain, and then he went to Egypt. Yeah, well, actually Spain, and then I think Morocco, and then Egypt. Not there. But guess who was there?
Paul was there. Paulos was there.
Paulos was there. Yeah.
Yeah, sure he was.
So, absolutely fascinating. All right. So then it says, passing in the street, beside her corner, he strides, walking as part of a growing group along the path to her house. So now the focus isn't on the whore anymore, but on the one in association with the whore, the one who is the apostle of the whore.
Leading the parade.
Leading the parade. You know, that's what Thomas Jefferson said when he wrote that Paul was the leader of the chorus. The first to contradict Yosha's message, and that he was the leader of the chorus in this regard, and he figured it out. So passing in the street, beside her corner, he strides, walking as part of a growing group along the path of her house. Wow. Now I have some things that I just pulled out from Paul's letters that I thought were interesting in this regard. Paul wrote this to his church in Corinth, speaking of hardly believing a report, like his own message, of course, which lacked evidence and proof, of a man who was allegedly, and this guy was allegedly living in sin. And then you'll find this in 1 Corinthians 5:1-5, that a man was allegedly living in sin with his stepmother. Something, this is what Paul wrote now, living in sin with his stepmother, something that even pagans don't do. Paul wrote, as though I were there, I have already passed judgment on this man. So then you must throw this man out and hand him over to Satan so that his sinful nature will be destroyed and he himself will be saved on the day the Lord returns. This is 1 Corinthians. I mean, this is Paul's second best letter. And what he's saying is that first of all, that sexual impropriety is sufficient to damn a person to hell. Well, that's news to Doe, I'm going to tell you, that's for sure. The second thing is he's judging.
Yeah.
You know, he is judging this man. Now, I'm going to tell you, if somebody is raping a little girl, I'm going to judge him. But if somebody's having an affair, I'm not going to judge him. That's not my business. I have two consenting adults want to go do something. And not a good idea, but I'm not. That's not my business. He's judging him. Now, the next thing is, can you tell me where Yahweh says, okay, you've got a problem. You've done something you ought not have done. So what I need to do is take you to Satan so he can fix you all up.
Yeah,
I'm going to take you to Satan so that the Lord can save you. I mean, how could you read
coming
that?
Coming from the guy who had to have his ego kept in check by Satan, that makes sense.
Yeah, so you're...
Well, that's what
you're
Paul
reading,
said
you're saying
him,
is, okay, Paul knows the way to Satan, and Paul thinks that Satan is the way to salvation.
Yeah.
Turn this person over to Satan. Are you kidding me?
You could get reference on this, you know.
Apollos did say that Satan helped him get out Yahweh's words because he helped keep him in check.
Correct.
So he would be more humble. So he said Satan was working with him. I mean, he clearly stated that.
Absolutely. So, you know, beyond the historical inaccuracy of pagans never living in sin with their stepmothers, beyond the fact that the Lord is Satan, beyond the realization that Yahweh will be reconciling Israel and condemning Gentiles upon his return, the notion that God wants his children to hand someone over to Satan when he's trying to keep us away from this whore is preposterous. But Shaul's demented proposition that Satan can destroy a person's sinful nature so as to save that individual affirms that he both knew that Satan is his Lord and that Satan is the savior of Pauline Christianity. This is bad. Now, to his credit, Paul knew where to find Satan. Timothy, my son. Now, Timothy was Paul's young lover, not his son. Here are my instructions, not Yahweh's, for you, based upon the prophetic words spoken about you earlier. There were none. Paul didn't get a single prophecy right. He never spoke prophetically of Timothy. May they help you fight well in the Lord's battles. Of course, recognizing the Lord is Satan. Cling to your faith, not knowledge or understanding, not wisdom, not even the relationship, in Christ. Now, this is an inappropriate and inaccurate Greek title as opposed to the Hebrew, Messiah, and Christ means drugged. And keep your conscience clear. For some people have deliberately violated their consciences, you know, by being observant. And as a result, their faith has been shipwrecked. Hymenaeus and Alexander are two examples. I threw them out, and I handed them over to Satan so that they might learn not to blaspheme God. So here's Paul saying, I handed two guys over to Satan.
Thanks.
A, you knew where to
Paulus.
Find him. B, they were
You're
on
the
first name basis.
You're the man,
This is
Paulus.
In 1 Timothy 1, 18 through 20.
I
get credit from the
Delta. I'm looking at it. I'm kind of astounded that anybody thinks that some guy, because he writes a letter, can actually turn people over to Halal. I mean, how could he do that? I mean, here,
now,
buddy.
Do I think that Paul knew Satan? Absolutely. Would he attempt to hand somebody over to Satan? Absolutely. He was everybody that Paul has beguiled, he's turned over to Satan.
Well, sure. But I'm talking about the physical act of handing someone over. I mean, I know Yahweh. I don't know how to hand people over to Satan. I mean, there's a thing called free will. And I don't even think Paulos can get around that. I mean, I will admit, most people use their free will extremely poorly.
Paul can't get around free will. That is true. So, while it may not seem related, I'm convinced that it is, especially in the context of the whore wanting to be worshipped through religious faith of Shaul. Now, the reason we're looking at this is that this is the person working with the whore, working with lurking
Clearly.
Outside of her house. So it's important for us to recognize that Paul admits that he worked with Satan. And these Corinthians and 1 Timothy both show Paul working with Satan, handing people over to Satan. Now, while it may not seem related, I think it is, especially in the context of the whore, wanting to be worshipped through religious faith of Shaul, leading the way to hell on her behalf. Just seven statements removed from what we've just considered. And after telling believers to pray for kings and all who are in authority so that we can live peaceful and quiet lives, saying that this pleased God, after associating this message with a perverse caricature of the man Jesus Christ, Paul wrote, "And I have been chosen as a preacher and an apostle, to teach the Gentiles this message about faith. I am not exaggerating, just telling the truth.
Wow.
It was true. He'd been chosen by his Lord. Satan.
So down the road there, they were supposed to pray for Vlad the Impaler, right? Or
yeah,
or,
I guess
or Hadrian,
so.
I guess.
A peaceful life. Yeah, why not?
At that point.
Pray for Hadrian. Yeah, as he massacres the chosen people and burns the Torah. Let's build a shrine to himself on the Temple Mount. Let's pray for him so he can live a peaceful life.
In modern
yeah, and can you imagine when did Yosha pray for Rome so that he could live a peaceful life?
I never heard him pray, but I think he hated them.
Yeah, and did he opt for a did he opt for a peaceful life, or did he opt for what Rome dealt him?
Confrontation everywhere he went.
He separated himself from the nonsense. Yeah.
Fact,
he did
didn't
it
he say
order.
Three times, "Do not think I came to bring peace. I came to bring division."
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean the Prince of Peace story is nonsense? Wow.
Nonsense.
Wow.
Yeah.
He said, fall out of my chair over here.
"Do not think I came to bring peace. I came to bring division." And so,
did he say something about even fathers and sons and mothers and daughters having separations over the truth? I mean, wow, boy, that's not very peaceful.
No, we've all experienced that.
Yeah, in every place of worship, I want men to pray with holy hands lifted up to God, free from anger and controversy. Didn't in Proverbs 6, didn't we read God say, "I hate, I hate, I hate. I hate, I hate, I hate." So certainly God is not free of anger.
No.
Now, this brings us to Paul's campaign against women. And while it's similar to Muhammad's Quran, where Allah most certainly is Satan, and that's indicting in itself, I suspect there's a reason behind this man's madness. Paul hated women, as did Muhammad. But there was one female individual, you know, Daud loved women, so maybe that's why Yahweh didn't have a problem with him. Paul hated women, Muhammad hated women. There was only one female individual in particular they loved, another one they specifically loathed. Paul's letters, as is the Quran, are odes to the whore of Babylon.
The beautiful that's the woman
they called the Lord. Yeah, right. That's the woman they loved. Yeah. No other woman was to rival her beauty, and most especially not the set-apart spirit of Yahweh, the material or maternal manifestation of Yahweh's light. So
you know, one of the reasons that I think Paulos hated women so much, besides the fact he was a homosexual, I think the reason that Ha-Satan really directs so much ire, and religion in general directs ire at women, you know, they're covered in all these religions and have to hide out and all this other nonsense. I think it's because back in the garden, Yahweh said, "And her offspring is going to crush your head."
Yeah,
that's why I think the hate comes from for women. That's I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And it says, so he says, this is what he says, "And I want women to be modest in their appearance, as did Muhammad. They should wear decent and appropriate clothing and not draw attention to themselves," exactly what Muhammad wrote, by the way they fix their hair or by wearing gold pearls or expensive clothes." This is the Nilt. But the Nilt conveys Pauline Christianity better than anyone else. Now this reads exactly like Muhammad and Allah's requirement that women not show themselves, covering their heads, their faces, their bodies in veils and burqas. "For women who claim to be devoted to God should make themselves attractive by the good things they do." Oh, boy. If you do good, that King Saul was good, and he was certainly bad.
Yeah.
He says, "Women should learn quietly and submissively." 1 Timothy 2:11. You can't make this stuff up. You know, even Islam actually means submission. "I do not let women teach men or have authority over them. Let them listen quietly." Hope there's some women listening to him. There are a lot in the chat room, and you know, 90% of people listening to the show aren't in the chat room. But I tell my wife all the time, I mean, calling Christianity is anti-women. They can't teach men. They have no authority over men. Let them listen quietly. Who is the ultimate teacher?
Yahweh's word.
The set apart spirit. You got a part spirit. And the source text that the set apart spirit teaches from is what?
The Torah.
Does the set apart spirit and the Torah share a common gender? So, from Yahweh's point of view, can a woman teach?
Absolutely. Better than us.
The only source of teaching from Yahweh's point of view happens to be his Torah and the set-apart spirit, and both are feminine. Now, this is what he writes. For God made Adam first, and then afterward he made Eve. And it was not Adam who was deceived by Satan. That, by the way, is not true.
No, he didn't.
Adam was absolutely deceived. The woman was deceived, and sin was the result. But women will be saved through childbearing, assuming they continue to live in faith, love, holiness, and modesty.
Yeah, what a shock.
Oh, boy.
Oh, kind.
Hey, by the way, there goes, what's his name's wife, right out the window there.
Yeah. Eve is the name of a pagan Mother Earth goddess. Yep. Adam was deceived by the same specious argument.
Isn't that the same cult that this the one that gave us Eve? Isn't that the same cult that gave us hell? Wasn't she the underworld fire goddess in that same Germanic?
Yeah, but you know, if you all the things surrounding Eve is Earth.
Fertility.
She's Mother Earth. Eve and Earth have a common etymology. So sin. So Adam was actually deceived by exactly the same argument. Sin is actually the result of doing what Paul is now doing, ignoring some of what God actually said, augmenting his instructions with one of his own, and then rejecting God's actual guidance. Women are not saved through childbearing. Bearing children in pain was in fact a consequence or penalty of Yahweh's mistake. And no one has been or ever will be saved by faith, by love, by holiness, or by modesty. And lest I forget, Muhammad also blamed Eve, making all women stupid as a result. God, Allah.
Right. They have half a brain of a man.
So this directly contradictory. So this is Paul. Working on behalf of the whore. Well, we're on the subject, and now that Shaul has admitted to working with Satan and to leading people to the adversary, even to the devil being the savior, let's consider what Paul wrote about his relationship with Satan in his second letter to the Corinthians. This boasting will do no good, but I must go on.
It won't do any good, but man, let me talk about myself.
I will reluctantly tell about the visions and revelations from the Lord. I was caught up to the third heaven 14 years ago. Whether I was in my body or out of my body, I do not know. Only God knows. By the way, that line was repeated exactly that same way in the Quran and the Hadith of Muhammad. Where he said he went to the seventh heaven, and he says, I don't know if I was there in body, only Allah knows. Exactly the same line. It's like Satan said, you know, this worked with Paul. I fooled 1 billion people. I just rolled it out again with Muhammad. I have no reason to update this. This is really good stuff. Yes, only God knows whether I was there in my body or outside my body. Now, by the way, if you were in heaven, were you there and with your body?
No.
Not even a small chance, pal.
Couldn't happen. But I know that I was caught up to paradise, and I heard things so astounding they cannot be expressed in words. Now, what could you hear that is astounding that can't be expressed in words? Isn't everything that is astounding expressed in words?
Didn't even Ezekiel express what he saw? I mean, really?
Yeah, I mean
come on.
What was there? Was there a musical note that was so astounding it couldn't be expressed in words? Is that it? Was there a kabang? Was there a kaboom? What was there, a giggle? I mean, what was it that was astonishing that can't be expressed in words? But yeah, Ezekiel went there, told us all about it. Yahu Kanan went there, told us all about it.
Yeah, well, I guess they weren't supposed to tell us because Paulus just said they weren't supposed to tell us because it's things no human is allowed to tell. It says right there.
Okay.
What an answer. This guy. Yeah, you want to know the truth about Paulos? Here's the truth. He would have to get 3 promotions just to be called an asshole. I mean, that's the truth about this guy.
That's true.
I know.
That experience is worth boasting about. But I'm not going to do it. I will boast only about my weakness. If I wanted to boast, I would be no fool in doing so. Because I would be telling the truth. But I won't do it because I don't want anyone to give me credit beyond what they can see in my life or hear in my message or even though I have received such wonderful revelations from God. So to keep me from becoming proud, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger from Satan to torment me and to keep me from becoming proud. 2 Corinthians 12, 1 through 7, as presented by the New Living Translation. That's why God says that if you're part of the group following the whore, you're stupid. To believe that man spoke for God when he says that the thorn in his side was a messenger from Satan, you're just stupid. It's an airhead. There's nothing going on. You're incapable of thinking. You're an absolute moron.
Well, what he's saying, and I've said this forever, yeah, is that Satan is working to help get Yahweh's words out.
Correct.
Right? To keep him humble. So he can get the truth out to people. Satan's guys are working with him. Says it, right?
One of the things that's true about all of Yahweh's messengers, not a one of them boasts. Not one. No,
you don't even know anything about them unless you do a whole lot of research, because they don't go on about anything other than this is the year and Yahweh came to me and here's the words and let's get it on. And they just start writing.
You know, I think I've come to understand Yahweh pretty well. We've got a good relationship. But who I am, what I think, what I have to say, my acumen is irrelevant, counterproductive, useless, stupid. Just what matters is what Yahweh had to say. He's brilliant. Yes, his visions and revelations were from the Lord, but as you know, the Lord is Satan's name and title. There is no such thing as a third heaven. There are no physical bodies in heaven. Everything Yahweh says can be expressed in words. And Yahweh expressly enabled humans to share what they had witnessed in heaven. Satan's messengers are demons, the worst of which had possessed Paul. And since they were both satanic emissaries, it should be no surprise that Muhammad would make the exact same claim, right down to the grandeur of his moronic revelations, the in or out of body experience to multiple heavens, and to being demon possessed. It all serves to prove that Satan lacks creativity. He would have Muhammad play reruns of Paul to an even more ignorant audience, this time turning the latter religion against the previous one. Now that Paul has admitted to being the leader of the whore's band, let's return to the proverb and consider what else Yahweh has to say about him. And wouldn't you know it? After Paul's diatribe on having one's faith shipwrecked as a result of violating one's conscience, we find, just before the dark of night, depicting the twilight of one's conscience and the fading of their soul. As the light fades after sundown, at the end of the day, at the pupil of night, there is total darkness and doom, when behold, A woman approaches to issue an invitation to meet him. Outfitted in the garments of a prostitute and whore. And she is craftily concealed, underhanded in evil of heart and character, of motive and judgment. So Paul said, you know, your conscience, their conscience failed them. Now God's saying here that the one whose conscience failed was Shaul. This is Ba-Nesheph. It's dusk in the twilight of the evening during the time of fading light. It's from Nashaf, which is the blowing out of one's breath, related directly to Nashama, which is conscience, and Nefesh, soul. So just before the dark of night, depicting the twilight of one's conscience and the fading of their soul. As the light fades after sundown at the end of the day, at the pupil, at the darkest point of night, when there is total darkness and doom, then behold, that's when the woman approaches to issue an invitation to meet him. Yeah, right on the road to Damascus. Shaul, Shaul, why? Why are you working against me? It wasn't very long that he turned and said, no, I'm going to work with you. It's a good gig you've got here. She was outfitted in the garments of a whore. She's crafty and concealed, underhanded and evil. So we now know that Satan reached directly out to Paul, issued him an invitation. You know, Yahweh's issued us invitations to meet with him 7 times a year. You can answer it or ignore it or reject it. Paul obviously ignored and rejected Yahweh's invitations, but Satan offered him one. He accepted it. She is disturbingly loud. Remember, Paul said, oh boy, you know, that he heard this loud voice that said these things, and he was so affected by it that he was blinded by it and had to be nursed back to health, just like Muhammad after his encounter. She is disturbingly loud, creating a confusing commotion. Yeah, she even quoted the most famous line of Dionysus, it's difficult to kick against the goad. By the way, the goad is that same thorn, the same sharp prod in the side of a dumb animal.
Yeah, he must have read a lot of Euripides and things like that. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm assuming.
Euripides' poem. But, you know, it is possible that Paul, rather than making it up, I wouldn't put it past Satan to have said it. Now, Satan would love Euripides' poems. Love the whole story of Dionysus. You know, he could be quoting what he actually heard.
So he chose a crafty liar and presented himself and gave him enough belief and faith that he could go out and just continue the nonsense story, even though he knew full well it wasn't true. I mean, he knew that.
Oh, of course. He knew he was possessed by Satan. He admitted it.
Yeah, he said so.
Yeah.
Just said so.
But so this beautiful manifestation of Satan is disturbingly loud, creating confusing commotion, and she is openly defiant and rebellious. You know, it is difficult to kick against the goad. You know, why are you working against me? Openly defiant and rebellious. In her household, in keeping with her slanderous stance and covert manner, it's not a way to live. I said, okay, you know, she is beautiful. She is seductive. She is offering invitations for you to meet with her. But that's not a way to live. Don't be part of her church. Don't be part of her household. Don't be part of her slanderous stance or covert nature. You know, and that's key, too, to understanding Satan. Satan works covertly. He does not work overtly, which means that Satan is not trying to establish himself as the adversary and to be worshipped as Satan. That would be overtly in opposition to God. Satan is covertly in opposition to God, which means that Satan is masquerading himself as Allah, as the Lord, as Jesus Christ, he's masquerading as the gods of religion, because that's how he operates covertly. And he doesn't want to be worshipped as the adversary. He wants to be worshipped as if he were God.
You know, he's described in the last couple of verses, he's described the church on the street corners, everything, totally Christian world, and still, it's not obvious to people.
And yeah, that even goes further on the locations. It says,
downtown, preaching out loud.
Well, preaching out loud. That's
telegram
true,
in a stadium.
Commotion.
I mean, what do you want?
Well, how about 12?
Yeah.
Now influencing the way one conducts one's life along the streets in the most prominent places, establishing a base to compel in the most spacious public squares, and besides every corner, she deceptively lurks, ready to deceitfully ambush. Now,
well, you know, I live here in Town Center, which is this giant, huge European-style. It's an outdoor mall, is what it is, full of cafes and restaurants and upscale shopping and all this. Not Rodeo Drive upscale, but, you know, your Dillard's and things like that. And interestingly, you know, that just to me describes, you know, your Christmas decorations and all the beauty, and it's all deceptive. I mean, that's what it puts me to mind of. More than
you know,
I'm in
Ohio, and there's a church on every corner.
Yeah.
I drove by a church today that was a full city block long.
Wow.
Oh, mega churches here. And there's a church, and when you drive downtown in Cincinnati, the Roman Catholic Church are dominant in the squares.
Really?
And on
that it was such a Catholic town. I did not know that about Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I really didn't.
Yeah. But it's not just mega Catholic churches and schools. And the most, you know, you see bumper stickers all the time of Mueller, which is one of the Catholic high schools here, and their rival, which is another Catholic high school, and Xavier, the Catholic school here in Cincinnati. But most of the schools here, I mean, not most of the schools, but I've never seen so many Roman Catholic schools. They're just there, and every neighborhood.
I've heard of Xavier. I mean, I think everybody has.
Okay.
God's going to be having a lot of struggle trying to decide which one of their football teams is going to win.
Well, it is tough every Friday night.
Yeah, Boston College on the high school. Oh, yeah, that's where the high school football teams do, and the Catholic schools play each other. You know, in California, modern day was the big one. So this says that this whore is lurking on every street corner. That this whore is in all the prominent places, establishing a base to compel in the most spacious public squares. Well, the only thing that has ever done that, because you don't find government buildings on every corner, you don't find government buildings on in all the public squares. You find government buildings in the capitals, but you don't find government buildings every place else. You don't find military outposts on the street corners. The military outposts are apart from the town.
No, you're right. I mean, it's describing religious buildings.
Churches and mosques. Yeah. This is churches and mosques. Now, in the case of Paul, it's churches.
Yep, this is churches we're dealing with.
You know, there are and communities. There is an occasional synagogue. In the greater Cincinnati area, there's probably 10 of them. But, you know, there's 10 churches every quarter mile.
I don't know if you guys have this phenomenon where you live, but around here we have now churches and strip malls. And literally you drive down Main Street of the town I grew up in the main strip, in the strip of stores, there's 3 different churches now.
Yeah, and strip malls, right.
Yeah.
They're everywhere. They're lurking everywhere. The only institution that fits this description of the whore is a church. I mean, even in mosques, You know, the moths are gigantic. Like in the Cincinnati area here, there's the one that is about a mile or so from where I'm sitting here. And it's grandiose, right beside Interstate 75. But it's not on a street. It's not on a city corner. It's not in the public square. Now, there are moths on public squares in Islamic countries, but they don't tend to have lots of them. You know, one of the reasons there's so many churches is there's so many flavors of Christianity. And so the Baptist church will be right next to the Lutheran church, will be right next to the Catholic church, will be, you know, right next to some Pentecostal church, which would be right next to some non-denomination church, would be right next to the Presbyterian church, and, you know, on and on and on and on. But in Islam, you know, it's, you know, if you're in a Sunni Islamic country, there's only the Sunni mosque. And if you're in a Shia, there's only the Shia mosque. And they're not, it's not a choice. So there's just not that many of them. The ones that are there are fairly large. But there's not
a religion that kills off its rivals. You don't tend to get a whole lot of diversity.
No. And so even you know, they kill off rival sects in Islam. So it's not.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, the Sunnis and the Shias are wild asses with their hands against their brothers and their brothers' hand against them, living in hostility with the whole world, as Yahweh predicted the descendants of Ishmael. But with Christianity, is the only there is nothing in all of human history that fits this bill, this description of the whore, other than Christianity, where there are churches on all the corners and all the public squares. They're the most dominant.
It's not just
a building
thing. That's anywhere where Christianity is popular.
You know, if you go take a tour of Europe, you know, every day they're going to take you into multiple cathedrals.
Mm-hmm.
The most dominant buildings in the cities.
Yeah.
You know, they're everywhere. And so that is what he's talking about here, is the whore lurking in Christian churches. And, you know, you don't have to be the smartest guy in the world to figure out that's the there is nothing else that that can be described.
Not even a
you
close
can't be
second.
Describing, you know, a supermarket. They're not trying
no,
to...
No, but you do have to seriously look at the words and think about them a little bit. And that's... You know, they really, governments, military, certainly the religious copy editors and the religious, they're resigned to the fact that most people are just going to be lazy, right? I mean, that's
correct.
The whole thing.
Right.
You're
going to
be moron. You're never going to go investigate.
Right. That's what God
says. It's
going to
be stupid.
With the whore, there's nothing but a bunch of idiots. Thoughtless people,
right.
Airheads. The naive. Easily beguiled. Yeah. Because if you read the seventh proverb here, and God is talking about the whore is not only in opposition to the Torah, read Christianity, but the whore is on every corner. It's establishing a prominent place in the most spacious public squares. And it's a prominent place from which to deceptively lurk and deceitfully ambush. Because, and deceptively lurk, this is the whore, this is Satan, using religion to deceive people into thinking that the devil is God. That is what he's describing here. And there's nothing else that he's describing here.
Yeah, because he's even describing the guy that created.
There's not a synagogue on every corner in any city in the world. There isn't a Hindu temple on and the most prominent places anywhere in the world. The only thing that exists in the most prominent places and on the street corners of the most traveled and the most populated cities, everywhere in the world where they're allowed, which would be everywhere except the
Muslim world.
Islamic world, is churches. In fact, even in Israel, you know, I was looking at the map of what is now Olives and Moriah and Zion. Guess what? There's everywhere churches. I mean, like on Mount of Olives, there's the Church of the Ascension. And the only building that's close to the summit of Moriah is a mosque. And the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. You know, it just goes on and on and on. They're everywhere. I can't drive to lunch and go a quarter mile without passing at least three or four churches. And, you know, there's one across the street where I ate lunch today that is one of these mega churches that, you know, must seat 10,000 people. You know, they're always announcing the timing of their worship services. You want to go in and wring the pastor's neck. Why would you think that the creator of the universe wants to be worshipped? I mean, isn't that the most disgusting notion in the world, that a superior being would create an inferior being for the purpose of that inferior being worshipping him?
Oh, yeah. Well, that superior being would really have to have ego problems. He would have to feel very insecure. He would have to be an outcast and almost a moron. I mean, really.
Yeah, but let's just say that the real creator of the universe was insecure. Mm-hmm. That the real creator of the universe had ego issues. How would being worshipped resolve that? Do you think
it wouldn't?
That, you know, you've mentioned a lot of times that I had some large businesses, and one of the negatives is everybody's kissing your tush in large businesses. They're always telling you how wonderful you are. And I want to tell you, the more you hear it, the more you're disgusted by it. And so rather than being a positive, somebody telling you, worshiping you, it's disgusting. It's irritating. It's nauseating. It's grating. Yeah, I'd much rather have somebody be real. So, Doe didn't worship Yahweh, but he was real with him. So,
pretty sure Abraham, when he first met him as Abram, he fell on his face and he says, "What are you doing down there? Get up and look at me. My covenant's with you. What are you doing down there, like an idiot?"
Yeah, what are you doing?
You know,
now?
I mean,
he
asked him. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
this goes on and on.
Yeah, Yashayah begins with Yahweh said, "I lifted you up. I reared you as children. I took you to a higher place, and yet you rejected me." You know, God isn't saying, "Wait a minute. You know, when we originally started this relationship, you were lifting me up in praise. You were groveling on your knees and telling me how wonderful I am, and now you're not doing that anymore. So I'm really upset with you." No, I got down to lift you up. That's how
that's the backwards nature of religion, and that's what you know. That's the fight. That's what we show everybody every day is showing them Yahweh's not a religious deity. He doesn't like books that are named after religious deities that twist his words. You know, I had a guy today tell me I was going to burn in the worst place in hell, and I'm a heretic. I said, "Well, yeah, I'm a heretic. I'm definitely a heretic."
That part's correct.
I told him he was half right. Yeah,
yeah, he was half right. But the notion that hell has fires.
It's just Dante's hell.
When a fire is mentioned in association with Sheol, it is because it is the fire is consuming and
judgment,
good from bad. Yeah.
It's a metaphor for judgment. I understand that. Right. And when, you know, when people start talking about fire, well, you know, Yahweh's light and Sheol's defined as a lack of Yahweh's spirit. Even the Ruach couldn't go there. You know, Yahusha's consciousness had to go there alone, separated from the spirit.
Well, I'll never forget, back when I was agnostic, you know, I would talk with religious people, and they're like, yeah, I went to church a few times. I didn't get anything out of it. And I get the response, well, it's not about what you get out of it. It's about God. I'm like, what does God get out of it then? What does he get out of it? He's going into a building with 50, 60, 100 other people singing these songs out of tune that are repetitive, like something you would hear on Barney the Dinosaur. What is God getting out of me doing that?
Yeah. Not only that, I got to ask, and this is something I always thought was asinine, even as a Christian. I really, and sad to admit I was ever one, but how in the hell would fire bother a spiritual being?
It wouldn't.
I mean, you could walk through fire. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, light.
Yeah, it would give you light to see. It would probably be a good thing. They would hope for fire in Sheol. They're not going to get it, but they would hope it.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how can a spiritual being get burned on fire? I mean, this is nonsense. It's nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly since the thing that Yahweh uses consistently to demonstrate his presence with his people is fire. You know, he introduced himself to Moshe, represented as fire. When he revealed the Torah, he was fire at the top of the mountain. When he led the people through the wilderness, it was a column of fire by night. So Yahweh uses the metaphor of fire to represent his radiant nature. And when he talks about the invitations to meet, there are four of them where he asks us to come into the presence and answer the invitation to meet with the feminine manifestation of this fiery light. So if there was fire in hell, since Yahweh uses fire as a metaphor for his light and his radiant energy, he would have to be there.
Well, in fact, the fire is used as a representative of the spiritual mother. You know, that's an aspect of it. You know. So that's
it's right there.
Fire
and
hell,
if anybody doubts it, it says Malacca. It says Malacca. Yeah. It doesn't say Malak. I mean, that's just straight on. You know, I showed that to a woman this week, and she said, so you think that the Ruach is female? I said, well, I don't think the Ruach has sex organs. I said, but I think it's definitely written in the feminine, as in Malacca. What do you think?
There's no questioning that. Ruach is feminine, period.
Ruach is what I believe.
Yeah, Ruach is a feminine noun, period. And when Yahweh speaks of the Ruach, he uses feminine pronouns. She.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's
there's
absolutely
a masculine form, too. He could have used Roush.
Right. You know, and just as the whore is a feminine rival, the whore does not have sex organs.
Yes.
God's not talking about sex. When Yahweh equates the set-apart spirit to our spiritual mother and assigns the set-apart spirit all feminine characteristics, just like his Torah and his covenant, his feminine characteristics, he is not talking about feminine from the point of view of having a vagina.
No,
exactly.
It has nothing to do with it.
Right? Doesn't have sex organs.
No, this is, you know, you really need to understand that in a family there is a mother and a father. There is a paternal influence and a maternal influence. And that the covenant is a family. And so Yahweh is manifesting himself as the parent, as the paternal and the maternal aspect of parenting his covenant children, guiding and teaching and nurturing and raising his family. That is the metaphor.
You know, going back to the whore being female, and the opposite is that true. The majority of representatives and, you know, advocates on behalf of religion aren't women, they're male.
Mm-hmm.
The Pope, the cardinals, it's all male except for the nuns who are the lowest of the low.
Because in all three of the world's largest religions, they're written to demean women.
Yeah.
in Pauline Christianity, I read some of that. It's disgusting the way it demeans women. And Mohammed's Islam is the most demeaning religion in the world to
Well, it would demean men too. See, that's the funny thing. Even Islam's that way. You understand? It demeans men too. I mean, it's demeaning that, let's say, your sister is outside, okay, and she's 8 years old without a headscarf on, and some of the religious police pull over and give her a chiding, and you've got to stand there and take it and even jump in on their side.
Right. You know, or worse, that your sister's out there, and some dude, a Muslim guy, decides that he wants to rape her.
Yeah.
And it's your sister is going to be ostracized and murdered by your mother and father for having been raped.
Yeah, and Sunni Islam.
Tell me what that would do to your conscience.
It's not only that. Imagine that you're out walking around with your wife and she's got to be all bundled up in the summertime or whatever.
Right.
The point is, whether you believe it or don't believe it, if you're in that country, you damn well better do it and you better knuckle under.
I'll ask you guys a question. If you're out in public and let's say your wife is dressed up and she's looking good and some guy does a double take and gawks. Does it make you feel good or feel bad?
I feel good about that. I don't feel
bad.
Yeah,
I do too. I feel good about it. Yeah, I feel good about it.
That's what I'm saying. It detracts from everybody's life. But then that's what slavery does, doesn't it? I mean, isn't it designed
it diminishes everybody. Correct. Yeah, if you think that,
really
women are yours to abuse and to own, it diminishes you.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that's the way I look at things today. It's religion is a net minus for all involved, for the society, for the person, for the world at large. That's why you've said before, Yahweh's not going to drag this trash into the Bay of. It's just not going to happen.
Now, I'm going to tell
it's
you,
already
that,
been
that you look at the most famous, most pompous, most egotistical religious person on earth today. That would be the Pope Francis, Bergoglio. I'm here to tell you, that man's miserable. He knows he's a fraud. He doesn't know the love of a woman. He doesn't know the love of children. He absolutely knows for certain that he's a fraud and that he knows he can't trust anybody. He's very, very alone. Yeah. It's a miserable life.
Sounds miserable to me.
Oh. I wouldn't want that for a nanosecond. Every aspect of it's just repulsive, and he knows it.
What keeps a guy like that going?
Power.
Oh,
sex.
Yeah, power.
I think he's a pedophile. I think at that level it's just mainly pedophilia and animal lust. That's what keeps him going. I can't imagine anything.
I don't know about I mean, I do know that that for example when it came out that Ted Cruz had five affairs, which doesn't bother me that the man has affairs unless you're running on a I'm the person you trust and here I'm out here with my wife
and
it just makes you a fraud. But one of the people reviewing it and it was a Ted Cruz supporter said, listen, we ought not be surprised because 70% of men have affairs. And by the way, they're having affairs with women, so that doesn't exactly exonerate women. But if that's average men. Men in powerful positions where power and money are an aphrodisiac. It's going to be in the high 90s.
Yeah, sure.
High 90s of men who are traveling, who are in, who have power and affluence. It's probably in the high 90s. It's just the nature of things, and so we really ought not be surprised by this.
No, we shouldn't be, and I don't know why people act so, I did a post on the fact anybody could think that their sexual prudence had, you know, when they violate every aspect of the Torah in every way that they can possibly do it, that being prudish sexually somehow saves them. I did a post on that.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's an absurd proposition.
Yeah. Yeah. You look at Muhammad, who was a rapist and a pedophile. And and people say, well, listen, he had, you know, this moral view of women, which is why he wanted them to be covered up so they were not promiscuous.
No,
and you say, so wait a minute. So his solution to absolving him of pedophilia and rape was to cover women up so they wouldn't be promiscuous.
Well,
he was
like
a pedophile and
a
rapist. You know, yeah. I was in a store the other day, and three Muslim women were shopping. And you want to go up to them and say, what in the hell is wrong with you? You're playing religious dress-up to dress modestly on behalf of the testimony of a pedophile and rapist. I mean, how could you be? Is it possible to be any more stupid? I want to go play religious dress-up as a woman on behalf of a religion that was founded by a guy that was a rapist and pedophile.
Yeah, that all just reminds me of a story I read in the early days of Israel when Golda Meir was the prime minister. There was in Jerusalem, there was a series of serial rapists on the loose. And so they decided to implement a curfew on women. And Golda Meir brought up the point, men are the ones doing the raping. Why don't we have a curfew on men?
Good point.
Exactly.
If men can't keep their lust in control around women who show skin, why are we punishing the women? Make the men wear something.
Yeah. And why would anyone get pleasure out of harassing and tormenting someone who has less strength than they do?
They'd have to be awful little to do that.
Is no situation where Dode was a rape, where Dode was a rapist.
No.
There's no circumstance where Dode was a pedophile, engaged in pedophilia. And so everything that Dode did was, and I don't know the inner workings of concubines, but in terms of Bathsheba, that was mutual.
Yeah, it was consensual.
Yeah. And so I don't think God's got an issue with consensual sex, but he has an issue with rape and with pedophilia and with incest and these kinds of things because they're so stunningly
against somebody.
Yeah, and they're vicious crimes. And he hates it when people use power to viciously hurt others.
Well, it's the usurping of others' free will.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
You push them in the corner, they can't do anything. That's all
correct. Yeah, that's correct. Wrong. Yeah, taking other people's free will, making them be your slave. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why God is so disgusted with humanity upon his return. Well, fellas, we've made good progress in Proverbs 7. It is a really interesting section going up that actually puts us in the purview of the whore and how she operates, where she speaks in first person.
Mm-hmm.
And then it concludes by Yahweh identifying the name of the individual who's that young man that's working on behalf of Satan.
All pretenses are aside now. He tells you this is it.
It is really true. And then once we're finished with this, we're going to go into Yahshayah 1 and 2. So we've got lots of material yet to cover.
All righty. Enjoy. Happy show.
Yeah, glad you got some electricity back.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's going
to
be fun.
Good to be in California.
It was pretty scary because you wind up losing your refrigerator and everything. So, but it came back on, so I made it. So.
Good deal. I'm glad to have you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right.
You good to
and
enjoy being a dad.
Area. I think he had to leave.
Oh, yeah, Patty.
Loved it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yesterday.
Good night.
Bye. Night.